You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Eternal and Transient Elements, The Cosmic Past of Humanity, and The Mystery of Evil. Collected Works, Volume 184, translated by Anna Moyse. This is Lecture 10, given on the 4th of October, 1918. Today and in the next few days, I want to draw some conclusions from the things said up to now, conclusions for human life itself. Let me say beforehand that in the world at large, people have ideas about anthroposophy with regard to which we should really develop a view which we must then also stress. Things we want to assert for life in the spirit, for the spiritual order, are generally acknowledged today, but for the natural order. The anthroposophical view must inevitably be misunderstood if it is mixed up with any old established errors or mysticism bordering on superstition. We must get in the habit of using terms like Ahrimanic or Luciferic, terms commonly used for the spiritual order, but at a higher level of existence. We may use them just as natural scientists use terms like positive and negative electricity, positive and negative magnetism, or the like. But in contradistinction to common or garden variety natural science, with all its prejudices, we must be clear in our minds that with regard to the spiritual order of the world, terms which in natural science have a definite and indeed abstract meaning must be taken in a more concrete, distinctly more spiritual sense. We know that human beings, as we know them in the life between birth and death, present one aspect which we have got in the habit of calling the physical body. Then the principle we call the ether body, or, in the endeavor to make a passable term, the body of creative powers. Then, and this already has spiritual character, the astral body, though it does not yet have the conscious mind character that fills the present-day conscious mind, which is closest to us. The principle which we call the subconscious, the term used by many people today, would be part of the astral body. Then there is our ordinary conscious awareness, as we call it, alternating between sleep and waking states. This sends only chaotic dreams into our sleep states, and in its waking states does not content itself with views or opinions, but takes recourse to judgments and abstract concepts. All this we refer to as the human I, capital. We might say that people of today only know where they are at when it comes to this last principle, the I as such. This I is mirrored by the conscious mind. It is where all thinking, feeling, and will to act actually take place. Everything else, astral body, ether body, and the physical body, in its true configuration, are below the level of consciousness, and also of the I. Anything that can be said about the physical body in anatomy, physiology, and so on, is merely the outside. Essentially, it is nothing but the awareness of the human physical body we gain in the same way as we gain other information through the senses. It is the outer image of the physical body for the conscious mind, but not the physical body itself. The three parts of essential human nature, which we call pre-earthly, as far as their evolution is concerned, you know this evolution from my title Occult Science, are initially outside the field of conscious awareness. You know that with regard to the spiritual order, we speak of the spirits in hierarchies that are above man, whilst three worlds of nature, animal, vegetable, and mineral, are below man. As soon as we consider the human being spiritually, we can no longer speak of the details of the astral, etheric, and physical bodies, of which ordinary sciences, or also anthroposophists, speak, when they are only concerned with human life as it is perceived through the senses. As I said in earlier lectures this autumn, the spirits of the individual hierarchies are connected with these lower levels of essential human nature if we consider their true nature. In the sense of what I said the other day when speaking of Goethe's philosophy of life, we can say that insofar as human beings develop in time with these three aspects of their nature, insofar as they go through the development which we can follow from birth to death, they relate to particular spiritual powers which are behind that development. I tried to explain this by saying that when we take this, there's a picture, to be the essential nature of modern man, we have to take a retrospective view and think of present-day human nature connected with the spiritual powers which we have identified as members of the higher hierarchies. As you know, these spiritual powers do not have a direct influence on the I of normal individuals, except for the spirits of form, or exousiae. Apart from the exousiae, therefore, which give man his own original form, the other spiritual powers do not influence the present-day conscious mind of man. We get a limited, but at least somewhat reasonable idea of the spirits of form if we turn our attention to the form, only a part of the general conformation, which human beings assume in their physical life. We are all born as more or less crawling creatures. The vertical is not within our power. A tremendous proportion of our general nature as human beings is connected with our uprightness. Not exactly mathematical verticality, but the power to be upright. If we consider the difference between human being and animal, purely in terms of external characteristics, we should not concern ourselves with the things which are usually considered, the number of bones and muscles and so on, which human beings essentially have in common with the animals. But indeed, this power to be upright, which gives developing human beings their form. This is merely a part of what is involved, but an important part. The power which intervenes in our physical development as power to be upright is of the same kind as all the powers which give us our form as earthly human beings. Only powers of this kind intervene in our I. Other powers do intervene. We call them the powers of cosmic movement, cosmic wisdom, cosmic will, referring to them as dunamis, curiosities, thrones, which are the old names for these entities now seen in modern terms. They intervene in something which does not come to human awareness, belonging to the astral body, ether or creative powers body, and physical body. If you observe these elements of essential human nature, without the spiritual content of which I have been speaking, you have really nothing but an illusion, a structure that merely seems to be something. In reality, we are not in that outward, unreal body, but in the spiritual powers to which I have been referring. The two powers we called luciferic or Ahrimanic influence human beings temporally, as it were, as I said the other day when referring to Goethe's philosophy of life, though they do not relate directly to their development. We may say that the luciferic powers do so in a more mental and spiritual way, there's a figure, and the Ahrimanic powers more from the subconscious. Human beings are thus cosmically placed in existence in a threefold way. We may say that there are spiritual powers in essential human nature, which are directly connected with the stream of human development. Two other streams, the luciferic and the Ahrimanic, are not connected with the immediate stream of development, but influence human beings temporally, being additional to what really belongs to the human being. Let us now look at life. When we do so, we see not only the stream that belongs to us, but always something in which the three streams have come together. Whatever we survey, be it the outside world, perceived through the senses, or human history with its pleasure and pain, joy and sorrow, activity and inactivity. What we see is that the three streams have flowed one into the other. In ordinary life, we do not do as a chemist does, who does not simply accept water as the fluid which one sees, but separates it into hydrogen and oxygen. Spiritual science has to do the separating and undertake this spiritual chemistry. Otherwise, it will never be possible to penetrate human life completely. We've been considering the particular nature of the spirit we call luciferic and the spirit we call Ahrimanic from all kinds of different points of view. There is yet another point of view, human life itself, from which we may also look at them. We may ask, quote, where is the point in human life where the luciferic powers have a real influence? And where is the point where the Ahrimanic powers gain particular access? If only human beings could just go through the steady development that is intrinsically theirs, but they cannot. You know from what I said on earlier occasions that they would only gain some self-knowledge in the second half of their life, but this would only be if they were not exposed to luciferic and Ahrimanic influences. In the real life, which we have to live, however, human beings are exposed to them, and must indeed reckon with those luciferic and Ahrimanic powers. In real life, however, in the life which we must live, human beings are exposed to the temporal interventions of the luciferic and Ahrimanic powers, and do indeed have to reckon with those powers. In everything in us that belongs more to the sphere of the conscious mind, but in such a way that we do not merely come to it naturally, but by going beyond the natural course, having self-knowledge already in the first half of life, for example, in everything human beings aim for, by using the conscious mind, there is something which we cannot call anything but hyper-conscious awareness. Our conscious mind would be very different if there were not this hyper-conscious element in it. The hyper-conscious state of mind makes people put more into historical life than they would put into it if they gave themselves over to their purely physical development only. At the present time in human evolution on Earth, we would be in a civilization of a completely different kind if hyper-conscious elements had not flowed into a conscious mind developed purely in the human way. But this hyper-consciousness does certainly make it possible for luciferic powers to intervene. We merely have to see in the right way how luciferic powers influence the conscious mind. People would never have occasion to develop a different way of thinking from the one which I characterized for you the other day as the ideal from the Goethean point of view, if it were not for the intervention of luciferic powers. Because of the luciferic powers, human beings develop fantasies about reality. They do not only take hold of reality, but combine the hyperconscious with the conscious element. They get all kinds of ideas about reality, ideas which then enable them to grow more thoroughly together with this reality than they would grow together with it otherwise. If we take the whole field of art, we have to stress that in art, where the hyperconscious element plays such a great role, unless art is to degenerate into naturalism, the luciferic element has to prove effective to the highest degree. It will not do, and I have stressed this time and time again, just to say that people should keep away from the luciferic element in their lifetime. If they were to do so, they would not be able to live a real life. They would be utterly Philistine. Luciferic mental agility and intellectual liveliness are again and again acting like a leaven to save human beings, spurring them on to escape their Philistinism. But in a way, we might say, This luciferic agility and liveliness does also make people inclined to take a bird's-eye view of the world. Everything by way of program, of really good ideas coming up, which people always think will bring the golden age in some way or other, all this comes from the luciferic inclinations that flow into human beings. Everything which makes people endeavor to escape from being together with reality, every means by which they would seek to raise their wings above the situation in which they have been placed as human beings, all this suggests a luciferic element. The luciferic principle in human nature is the drive which makes us again and again grow less interested in others. If we were to follow our own inherent human nature, that is, the powers of development that belong to the actual human stream, our interest in others would be much, much greater than it actually is. The luciferic spirit, which is part of human nature, leads to a certain lack of interest in others. We should attach considerable value to this very point in studying the essential nature of the human being. Many things would be different in this world if we were to acknowledge this real urge we have to be much too interested in anything we concoct ourselves, and take far too little interest in anything which other people think and feel and do. We only gain true insight into human nature if we let a question illuminate our view of the human being, and that is, quote, what drives me away from developing an interest in others? Close quote. It will have to be a task set for future human civilization to develop exactly this insight into human nature. Today we often still call it knowledge of human nature when someone says that what he imagines to be human nature is or ought to be such and such. To take people as they are and be clear in one's mind that people as they are, even if criminals, which is something that also has to be said, will tell us something about the world that is more important than the fantasies we have about essential human nature, however great our ideas on the subject. To say this to oneself is to give the luciferic element the right degree of equality in us. Such endeavor to understand human nature would tell us infinitely much. The present age is really further removed from the nature of human evolution on earth than any other. Do not confuse what I mean here with being uncritical about human nature. Of course, anyone who makes it his rule to say, quote, you must consider everyone to be good and love everyone equally, close quote, will make things nice and easy for himself in a luciferic way, for he is really and truly basing himself on fantasy. To consider everyone to be equal is really and truly a luciferic fantasy. It is not a question of cherishing a general idea, but exactly of taking each individual in real terms and developing understanding that is full of love, or perhaps better put, quote, full of interest, close quote. Now we may ask, quote, what is the point of all this luciferic power in us if it prevents us from being tolerant of human nature in a way full of wisdom and developing an interest in it? Close quote. That power has its justifiable place in the human mind and spirit. This luciferic power does have to be there as well. For if we were only in the ongoing stream, developing the inclination to gain insight into every human being, we would simply drown quite miserably in our knowledge of the human being. We would drown. We would not be fully ourselves. It is connected with many of the secrets of existence that there is really nothing to be found in it, which, if consistently followed, its consequences taken to their extreme, will not then turn into evil, into misfortune. The principle which really and truly unites us with others, which lets us find the other person in ourselves, would make us drown in our knowledge of humanity if that luciferic element were not always there, again and again picking us up away from drowning, again and again taking us to the surface, to find ourselves and develop our interest in ourselves again. In our relationship to others, we are constantly alternating between our own inherent power and the Luciferic power. And anyone who says that it would make more sense for people to follow only their own inherent power and not be touched by the Luciferic power at all would be the kind of person who, seeing a balance with its beam and two scales, would consider it better to take away one scale and weigh things only on the one single scale. Life proceeds in states of balance, not in absolutes. Speaking of the Luciferic influence, initially with regard to human life, we may say that it takes hold of the conscious mind, but in such a way that hyper-conscious elements enter into it. The Ahrimanic influence is initially on subconscious human life. The Ahrimanic powers enter into all the subconscious, often most artful drives, which are part of human nature. To characterize Ahriman and Lucifer as persons, let us say, we might say, quote, Lucifer is an arrogant spirit which prefers to flip up into bird's eye view, getting a great overview. Ahriman is a morally isolated spirit which does not easily show itself, active in the human subconscious, influencing the subconscious mind, conjuring up judgments from this subconscious sphere. Close quote. People then think that they form judgments in the conscious mind, when in fact they are often conjuring them up from their artful subconscious impulses, or also let them be conjured up by Ahrimanic powers. As we know, religious references often originate in ancient spiritual scientific views, and Peter was not wrong in referring to Ahriman as the lion who walks about, seeking whom he might devour. Peter called Ahriman this because Ahriman does indeed prowl about secretly in the subconscious mind and seeks to achieve his goal in the world by drawing the subconscious power of the human being to himself, using it to achieve goals in world evolution that differ from those which are reached by following the straight line of human evolution. With regard to historical life, it is always the Luciferic powers which make us think up great cosmic dreams, which, however, are not in accord with human nature. Think of all the great utopian ideas people have thought up. This happens because such Luciferic thinking has the bird's eye view perspective, ignoring all the lesser life down below. People then think that the world can be organized along the lines which our thoughts take from the bird's eye view. Such ideas about creating an ideal world are Luciferic by nature. Dreams of world power arising from human spheres that are set apart are Ahrimanic by nature. They evolve from the subconscious mind. It is Ahrimanic to take a certain sphere of human existence and aim to encompass and embrace the whole world in that sphere. Anything connected with the desire to gain power over others, everything which goes against sound social aims, is Ahrimanic by nature. Anyone of whom we are able to say that he is possessed by Lucifer, now not in a superstitious but in our sense, is losing interest in others. Someone who is possessed by Ahriman wants to have power over as many people as possible. And if he is clever, will use their weaknesses to gain power over them. For it is Ahrimanic to look for human weaknesses in the underground sphere, in the subconscious, and so gain control over people. We now have to ask where all this comes from. The question which has to be of the greatest interest to us is, quote, where does all this come from? What is the nature of spiritual powers, such as the Ahrimanic and Luciferic ones? Close quote. You'll agree that we know our earth to be a metamorphosis, to use the Goethean term, of earlier cosmic bodies, the fourth metamorphosis. To be able to put names to them, we spoke of Earth's first embodiment as Saturn, then Sun, then Moon. It is now embodied as the planet Earth. We know, therefore, that this Earth is the fourth embodiment of its cosmic nature, the fourth metamorphosis. It will go through further metamorphoses. We have to consider all this when we now want to ask, quote, what significance do the Ahrimanic and the Luciferic powers have in the whole cosmic setting in which man finds himself? Close quote. We know that the spirits of form are connected with the configuration of our Earth, the part of the cosmos with which we are in immediate contact. When we consider the special characteristic of the Earth's configuration, we find that it is identical with the quality which, as I said earlier, is found in the way in which we overcome gravity in our power to be upright. This may be just a very small part of it all, but still it is there. The spirits of form are, as it were, the ruling powers in earthly existence, in the present metamorphosis of our planet. And we know that they act through other spirits, to which in our modern way we give the ancient names of Archai, Archangeloi, and Angeloi. The first of these to interest us are the Archai, the prime origins or powers. We know that in the ranking order of the hierarchies, the spirits of form come, as it were, immediately above the Archai. In the course of evolution intrinsic to man, bracket shown as simple white chalk lines in figures 9 and 10, close bracket, the powers of the Archai are, as it were, serving the spirits of form. Archai and exousiai influence our human nature. Spirits which we call the prime origins, the spirits of form. But apart from this, the following is also always the case. Some spirits of form disguise themselves as prime origins, as Archai. They could be exousiai, but do not show themselves as such, but as Archai. They are in disguise. As a consequence, anything which is part of the outward form of Earth may be as dependent on them as it is on the actual spirits of form. The important point is, however, that in our earthly existence, everything connected with space, taking form in space, configures itself out of something which is non-spatial. We will only fully understand the spatial principle if in its image nature we trace it back to archetypes which are non-spatial. It is most difficult for Western minds to envisage the non-spatial. But the situation is that everything connected with our own intrinsic human nature, everything arising from the spirits of form and assuming configuration in space, results from the non-spatial. In real terms, this means that as an individual human being who first went on all fours, we come upright, overcoming gravity in erect configuration in space. The power which is behind this enters into space from a non-spatial sphere. So if we were merely subject to the spirits of form which belong to us, we would, in every way in which we occupied space, bring the non-spatial to realization in space, for the spirits of form do not live in space. You will not find the divine if you look for it in space. Of course not. Any configuration appearing in space is a realization of the non-spatial. The spirits, which really are spirits of form, but disguise themselves as Archai, as prime origins, would by their nature have been destined for the non-spatial sphere. But they enter into space. They are active in space. And that is the actual Ahrimanic quality. Spirits, which are designed to be non-spatial, have preferred to be active in space. This makes it possible to configure things in space in such a way that the configuring does not shine in directly from the non-spatial sphere, but that the spatial is reproduced in space, the one by the other in space. To give you an instance, we all differ from one another because all of us are placed in life from the non-spatial sphere. Our originals are in the non-spatial sphere. Everything is altogether different. You will know the instructions Leibniz gave to princesses. Sometimes they don't have anything else to do, to look for two leaves that were exactly alike. They did not find any, for there truly are no two leaves that are exactly like one another. In a sense, therefore, we are, all of us, configurations that come from the non-spatial, for none of us are like anyone else. Yet we are also like one another, especially if related by blood. We are like one another because there are spirits which shape spatial according to spatial, shaping the spatial not according to the non-spatial, but also the spatial according to the spatial. We are alike because there are Aramanic powers in us. People have to admit this to themselves, otherwise they'll go on speaking ill of Aramanic and Luciferic powers without ever wanting to understand them. This example shows most clearly how Ahriman plays into life. Insofar as you have the nerve to say, quote, I am a unique human being in my configuration and not like anyone else, close quote, you are in the straight line of evolution. And if this alone did apply in the world, if the Ahrimanic stream were not to come in from the side, no mother would take pleasure in having a daughter who looks so much like her, for she would notice that every human being is a reproduction in space of something non-spatial, with no spatial form resembling another. The entry of some spirits of form into space was the occasion that gave rise to the Ahrimanic principle. That principle is not, of course, limited to human forms being alike. It applies to many things, but we were able to give it as an example. I would now ask you to remember what I added, not to cheer you up, but as part of our subject matter, when I said that human beings are really only intelligent enough for self-knowledge in the second half of their life. I said that, insofar as our life proceeds in time, and if it did only this with nothing else influencing us, we would indeed only gain self-knowledge in the second half of life. However, I said that Luciferic powers were active in the first half of life and produced a self-knowledge that does not arise from our own inherent human nature. But I juxtaposed what human life would be if it followed only its own inherent trend with the realm of eternity, as I called it. With regard to everything which is part of our essential human nature, we are a different person at 50 from the one we were at 20. We develop. With regard to everything where we do not develop, we belong not to our physical body, but to the element of spirit and soul, and are connected with the realm of eternity, the realm where time does not play a role. Just as something non-spatial is behind everything spatial, so something timeless is behind everything that exists in time. We would be completely different human beings if we did not have the connection with the realm of eternity. We would only wake up from a kind of dream life, as I said some time ago, when we were 17 or 18. But we live in the realm of eternity, and this balances out the half-asleep state in the first half and the terrible cleverness in the second half of life. All the spirits of the higher hierarchies that we know belong to this realm of eternity, the only exception being the spirits of form. They play into the realm where things evolve in time. However, their life is spatial and non-spatial, for they live, as it were, between non-space and space, and so they bring the forms from non-space into space. This is subject to a time process. Their life plays into time. But the other spirits that are above the spirits of form in the hierarchies belong purely to eternity. We can only speak of them as spirits in time by way of analogy. To take it as real would make it nonsense. It really is difficult to speak of these things, the simple reason being that in the present evolution of time, only very few people have a lively awareness of the concepts and ideas which one develops when stepping out of space and out of time. Most people today would, anyway, declare anything non-spatial to be sheer fantasy, as they would things that are timeless, eternal and imperishable, and then also anything unchanging. Yet beyond the order of exousiae, all spirits belong to the realm of eternity. There are, however, those among them which disguise themselves as spirits in time, entering into time. Just as the Aramonic spirits enter into space, so do other spirits enter into time. These are Luciferic spirits, which in the hierarchic order really belong to the spirits of wisdom, but act as spirits of form, because they are doing so in time. They move the elements, which otherwise would be timeless in the human soul, into time. Because of this, some things which would be there forever, if we were able to follow solely the realm of eternity, are also subject to time. We may forget them, for instance, or recall them to a greater or lesser degree, which happens because of our body and soul nature, and not our spirit and soul nature. Recall, memory. The Luciferic powers are spirits of eternity, disguised as spirits of time. They are really spirits, spiritual powers of a most elevated nature in the cosmic order, ranking above those of which some parsons, who consider themselves well versed in theology, speak when speaking of the divine principle. In fact, they are talking about much less sublime powers, as we have mentioned earlier here in this place. These Luciferic powers have the potential to translate into time, as it were, things which otherwise, from our human point of view, would seem to us to be purely spiritual and eternal. They make it appear to progress in time, and it is this apparent progress of certain phenomena in time which solely and only makes people say that their mental and spiritual activity is connected with processes of a material kind. If our souls were not filled with Luciferic spirit, as it were, our mental and spiritual activities would be immediately evident as being spiritual by nature. We would never even think that mental and spiritual activity could be attached to matter. We would be aware that the only image which I often use is also the only correct one, that anyone who thinks his mental and spiritual activity has a material basis is like someone who stands in front of a mirror and thinks that the image in the mirror comes from an entity that is behind the mirror. Yes, the image does depend on the form of the mirror. In that way, our thinking also depends on our bodily nature. But, in this respect, the body functions in much the same way as a mirror. This would be immediately apparent to the beholder if it were not for the Luciferic illusion that the mental and spiritual activity is configured on the basis of physical matter. To the degree to which Lucifer enters into the hyperconscious, he is again producing the illusion which fools us much in the way in which we may be misled to shatter a mirror in order to see what the person behind it is like. The illusion that something non-physical can derive from physical matter is essentially Luciferic. We may say that anyone who says that things of the mind and spirit are the product of matter is making Lucifer his god, even though he may not actually say so. To say that anything mental or spiritual arises from physical matter is exactly the same as saying that the mirror produces the mirror images as if the entities were behind it. To say such a thing is wholly identical with saying, though not in explicit terms, that Lucifer is God. We may also inquire into the opposite pole. It is a Luciferic notion that the mirror, physical matter, lets something flow from it that is non-physical by nature. The opposite pole is that human beings are also under the illusion that things in the world, which we perceive through the senses, could ever really have an influence on our inner life. If it were not for the Aramanic illusion created by powers that enter from non-space into space, people would realize that powers which are anchored in the sphere of matter can never influence essential human nature. To say that powers, energies anchored in matter, can take effect in human beings is purely Aramanic. Those who say this declare Ahriman to be their god, even if they do not explicitly say so. However, human beings float between these two illusions, one which again and again makes them think that the mirror lets images flow from it that are real entities, as if matter could generate mental and spiritual activities. The other illusion is that the external existence we perceive through the senses contains energies which can lead to human activities if converted in some way. One is the luciferic, the other the Aramanic illusion. It is a characteristic of our time that people have no inclination to concern themselves with things of the spirit the way they do with the natural order. It is, of course, easier to talk about the spirit from a point of view of nebulous mysticism or of abstract concepts relating to nature than it is to enter into spiritual processes and spiritual impulses in a truly scientific way, the way one does for the natural world. We do live in an age when people must start to enlighten themselves about the principle which is active in their soul sphere. We know why the time has passed when people could find the impulses that would take them further in their unconscious. Today we must start to enter consciously into the field in which the soul lives and generates conscious awareness. We may say, therefore, that human beings would really be very different from the way they are now, if they followed just their own inherent nature and the good spiritual powers in the world as they develop. The fact is that they follow this original development and are at the same time also under the influence of luciferic and Aramanic powers, which are active in time. The question is, how can equilibrium arise between the three powers? To establish this equilibrium, or at least discover how it can be established, we have to pay attention to the following. People take things easy in external natural science, for in certain areas they base themselves on the principle, quote, one needs a knife to eat, so one takes a razor from its case and uses it to cut up the food on the table, close quote. Many scientific views are developed in this way, for instance, the one about death. In modern natural science, people tend to use not much more of the concepts at hand for the phenomenon of death, but the cessation of an organism. That is simple, and one can speak in the same terms of plant death, animal death, and human death, which is what some who call themselves scientists do in a really grotesque way. This does not really differ from putting a table knife and a razor in one and the same category when speaking of a knife. In reality, the principle which we may call death is different for plants, different for animals, and different for human beings. Generalization comes in because one sees the cessation of functions in all three cases. If we study death as part of human nature, we have spoken of the phenomenon of human death on several occasions. The nature of death is such that, in a way, we may see it as the power that balances out the luciferic powers. Death, after all, is not a once-only phenomenon, for human beings actually begin to die as soon as they are born. The impulses for dying are in them, and death ensues at a particular point in time. All the impulses that lead to death are also the powers which establish equilibrium with the luciferic powers. For with death, human beings are taken from the realm of time into that of eternity. We know the nature of the luciferic powers to be such that they actually belong to the realm of eternity, and take the things they should be doing in that realm into the realm of time. This could not be balanced out if death were not part of the realm of time. It takes human beings from the realm of time into the realm of eternity. Death balances out the luciferic. The luciferic element takes eternity into time. Death takes time into eternity. That is putting it in an abstract way, but there is a vast amount of reality in this abstract notion. What was it that we had to say of Ahriman? He makes the similar, similar. I gave the example of similarity in human nature, which is connected with the Ahrimanic principle. A counterbalance has to be created, or must have been created. We can't be teleological about this, hence, quote, have been created, close quote, for this state of being similar. Let me read that again. A counterbalance has to be created, or must have been created. We can't be teleological about this, hence, have been created, for this state of being similar. There has to be this counterweight, which acts against the similarity. Oddly enough, people often use one of the confusing ideas which one gets if one does not enter into deeper connections in ascribing this similarity to the very counterbalance. The counterbalance for similarity actually is the power of heredity. We are similar not only in the form which leads to our configuration, but also have inner powers of heredity in us. With these inner powers, we actually counter that similarity of form. A science must be confused if it puts similarity and heredity together. We look like our parents, but at the same time, our parents have passed on certain powers which we have in our inner being. Powers that seek to take us back again to the original image of man. Our inheritance really lies in fighting that similarity. A more subtle study of human life can indeed show this, even without supersensible observation, in purely external terms. Do try to ask life in the right way. Do try to study people who are particularly similar in appearance to their parents, grandparents, and so on, in some form, element, or other. And then consider the inherited moral impulses. You will find that the inherited moral impulses do, as a rule, counteract the similarities of form. Study the more outstanding historical figures, looking at portraits which show their outward appearance to be similar to an ancestor, and you'll everywhere find qualities of soul in the biography which have been inherited and go against those that have produced those similarities in appearance, in form. In essence, this is one of the secrets of life. Ancestors would understand their descendants, parents their children very much better, if they were able to accept such a fact without prejudice. So, for example, please forgive me saying such things, but we are not, after all, a community of Philistines. If a mother has a young son who looks very much like her, she may be pleased that he looks like her. But for his upbringing, it might be a good thing if she now said to herself, quote, "What kind of qualities is he about to develop, which are rather like those that cause me to be in frequent clashes with my husband?" Close quote. We need to pay attention to such real impulses that have tremendous significance in life. For bringing up children in future, for future human evolution, it will be most important to gain insight into such impulses. For in future, education cannot be based on abstract principles. One will have to look for foundations, empirical, real foundations. And these cannot be found unless one is able to read life. We must be able to read it, which means we must know the letters. In real terms, as you know, there are many more, but to spell out what is needed for the immediate future, it will be sufficient to know three letters, normal development, and the Ahrimanic, and the luciferic principle. Those who do not know them cannot read, just as someone who does not know the alphabet is unable to read a book. They simply are the letters through which we come to know life, to read life. And the utopian spirit, which is so widespread, can only be overcome if we learn to read life. It means, however, that we must study the powers that play a role in life. Someone may, of course, say, quote, "You speak here of something which you say is original human nature, yet this is nowhere to be found," close quote. That is obvious. But the objection is the same as when someone says, quote, "You are telling me that the water flowing in the river contains hydrogen and oxygen. I do not find them there," close quote. You see, we have to go into these things and above all get a real idea of what form is. I have made the following comparison before and would like to repeat it now. You may go to Koblenz in Rhineland-Palatinate, or also to Basel, and admire the river Rhine, and the thought may come to you, quote, "This Rhine, there it flows. No one knows for how long it has been flowing, for centuries, no doubt, and perhaps even for time immemorial. How old this river Rhine is," close quote. What does old really mean? The water you see there will be somewhere entirely different in a few days' time. It will have gone. It certainly is not old. For a few days before, it simply was not there, but somewhere entirely different. What you see there certainly is not old. You should not think of it as centuries old. And when you speak of the Rhine, you will probably not be speaking of the channel in the ground in which the water is flowing. You are actually speaking of something which actually is not there at all. For speaking of reality, you cannot speak of something which is there in front of you. For what you have there in front of you is a coming together of currents that are active throughout the world, and it is merely that they are in equilibrium. Wherever you look, you see states of equilibrium. The realities are something which you need to penetrate. Spelling out life is only possible if we penetrate into the realities. Tomorrow, I'll talk about the way the Luciferic and Ahrimanic impulse is connected with the Christ-Yahweh impulse, so that you may see how this Christ-Yahweh impulse really relates to these streams. The end of Lecture 10.